You should exercise your right to request one, and the district will pay for it. Now, if you, and this is only if you have like lingering questions or concerns that the district did not, that they did not address. So the second thing that he really feels.
This is Parent Them Successful with author and licensed educational psychologist, Jessica Shields. Your child no longer has to struggle. On this parenting podcast, we unravel the complexities of the education system, give insight into intervention services, and offer encouragement and tools alongside your parenting journey. It's time for your child to thrive. Welcome your host, LEP educator and mom of four, Jessica Shields.
Hello, Parent Warrior, and welcome to the Parent Them Successful podcast. I am just so glad that you're tuning in for this episode. It is a very special episode to me, and it is dear to my heart because today I'm going to be passing along a message to you, to parents who have children in special education or who has a child that you suspect needs just additional support. So, I have talked with many of my colleagues in the field, and my colleagues are from across the nation. And I just asked them, you know, what are some things that you want to share with parents that you don't feel comfortable saying in a school setting, or, you know, it's just too political for you to say it at work, basically. So, you know, they shared with me. I said I would keep their names anonymous, so I'm going to honor that. But today, I'm going to be that voice. I'm going to be sharing with you what school psychologists across the nation want you to know, because we want you to be very good advocates for your child. We want you to just know exactly what you need to say, know your rights. There's so much to special education, or even if your child is struggling, you know, that might be a conversation that your school has with you that they want to test your child. So there's just so much that we want to impart with you about how you can better support your child. So let me say this. You know, oftentimes I find myself in IEP meetings and, you know, there are certain things I want to talk about. I want to tell the parent, but honestly, school politics says, nope, that is not what I want you to do. That is not what you're going to say. We're not going to talk about that. So I'm like, oh, if they only knew this or they only knew that. So that's what this episode is about, is if you only knew this or if you only knew that, we want to tell you. So first of all, I want you to understand that as school psychologists, we often find ourselves in that weird space, you know, between the school politics and between advocating for families and children. And, you know, in a way, first of all, that goes against the grain. So again, this episode is dedicated to all the parents who want to be empowered. You want to ensure your child is getting the best education possible and without all the games. Okay, let's just be clear. Now, I want you to be taking notes for this episode, especially if you feel like, oh, I have an IEP meeting coming up, or, you know, I'm in the process of getting my child assessed. So it's important that you go prepared. So stick around for everything that we want to give you as a gift to help you be empowered. And also stick around for this week's parenting challenge and your loving reminder. You don't want to miss it. Now, I do want to say this. The majority of school psychologists see themselves as advocates for children. However, at times, remember, it can be conflicting when we're put in that position at work, and there are certain things we can say or can't say, but there are certain things we want you to know at the same time. So it's a very, very hard or difficult position to be in at times. But we are here to support you. We are here to support your child. We really do care about you. Now, that's not to say others don't care, but we're often the ones who educate teachers and administrators on the rights of families and special education legality. So that's a lot of what we do. And that's only really one of many roles that we play. So with that being said, let's go ahead and get down to the nitty gritty. And as I look back on this feedback that I've received from many school psychologists, there were so many juicy nuggets shared. And I'm just going to go down the list and then just really expand on what they shared with me and communicate that to you. So one psychologist really wanted you to know that it's important that when you are in an IEP meeting, that you have a draft copy of the IEP document. Now, because we're still doing things online, sometimes these meetings are still held virtually. You still can receive an electronic document or draft IEP, even if they are sharing it live. You can ask for that. It is your right, and it should be given to you. So it's important for you to know that you have a right to that draft copy. And as they're going through that IEP document, it should not be a rushed experience for you. It should be thorough so that you understand every part of it. So one other thing she wanted to say or get across to parents is that you should make sure that the IEP team is going over service options that have been considered. So service options could be how your child is going to be served, whether it's in a group, whether it's in a specialized class setting, whether it is going to be a pullout, like what is the service going to look like and how much, and what are your options? Also, there's a section on every IEP document that talks about harmful effects. So if your child is being pulled out of class for any given amount of time, the harmful effect could be that they're missing that general education instruction. And what is going to, you have to weigh your pros and your cons in this situation. This harmful effect, is it going to be more harmful to pull my child out, or is it still going to be more beneficial because that's what they need? But it shouldn't be something that's skipped. It should be at least mentioned. And if you have questions, you can ask. But that should definitely be articulated in that meeting. Also, she wanted you to know not to be afraid to ask questions about goals. Any new goals that are being proposed, you think it's too hard? Is it going to be too difficult for your child to reach within a year at an annual, right? Or is it too easy? Just thinking about the goals, and also be able to share some of what you would like to see. And that should be reflected in the proposed goals. And let me tell you, the goals should be at least slightly different from what they were before. And I like to look at, is my child ever meeting goals? Because I've been in meetings year after year, the child has never met a goal. So it makes me think, first of all, are you working with my student? Are you working with my child? If they're not meeting their goals, what are you doing? Or especially if it's year after year, that's very frustrating because you want to see success. Or are the goals not, if they're not appropriate? So you have to really listen to those goals, think about your child, where they are. And that's where baseline information comes into play. Looking at the baseline, where are they starting from? And then how will the goals get met? So that's scaffolding those goals, benchmarks. You'll see those terms. Now, how will the goals be addressed? If it's unclear, you can ask those questions. Feel free to ask questions and maybe ask them to change the goal a little bit or tweak it so that it makes more sense and it's clearer for you. Also, this psychologist wanted you to know that if you have a speech and language pathologist or other related service provider like occupational therapist, if they state they will consult, I've seen this one too. If they say they will consult, then under supplemental aids, that needs to be tied to a goal. So make sure that anytime someone says, oh, we're not going to pull your child out, we're not going to do direct service, we're just going to consult with the teacher, that it's explicitly stated in there and that there is still a goal tied to what they're consulting about. All right. So the next one, now this particular psychologist had a lot to say. So one thing that she sees is that some teams, IEP teams, are not always assessing in all areas of concern the first time. So this would be for those of you who don't have children in special education right now. This is your first time. In this initial, they should assess all areas of suspected disability. And a district, in her opinion, she feels like a district has one time to try and get it right. Like, this is your initial, get it right. Districts can do this by talking to you first, interviewing parents prior to sending out an assessment plan. When you talk to parents before you send out the assessment plan, it'll give the psychologist an idea of what areas are your concern and what they can look for as they're doing their assessment. And you can pull certain tests and assessment kits to use to help address the parents' concerns. Now, again, this will allow more than just looking at records. It will allow for a deep dive into that whole entire assessment process, and it'll be more comprehensive and it'll give you the answers you have been looking for. So an example could be dyslexia and ADHD. So that could be a specific learning disability and other health impairment. So looking for those things. Now, another thing that she mentioned, that if you request a particular assessment tools, the districts can use that information against you when you request an independent evaluation. So an independent education evaluation, an IEE, in that same area. And there's nowhere in the law that states that an FBA, which is a functional behavior assessment or analysis, is needed to even develop a behavior plan, whether it's tier three. The law actually does require an FBA if there's a 10 days of suspension for a manifestation or determination. So that's the only time that you really truly have to have an FBA. But going back to requesting an IEE, you want to make sure that the district uses their tools, first of all, using their tools that they have at their disposal. And if something is missed and you're not quite happy with the assessment that the district provided, of course, you have the right to ask for an outside independent education evaluation. As far as the FBA, sometimes districts will say, well, in order to develop a behavior plan, we need to do an FBA, but that's not true. There can be some information and data that teachers can gather to kind of determine where they see triggers or what's going on in the classroom to help create a behavior plan. And if there's a plan, there should be a goal. So a behavior goal. And it's important to know that the only time that the law requires that FBA, functional behavior assessment or analysis assessment, is in the situation where you're considering a manifestation determination. And again, that is when we have 9 or 10 suspensions. At the 10th day of suspension, we're supposed to hold that type of meeting. So generally we'll hold these if it gets really close to that suspension, because that means we need to come back to the table and figure out something so that the child is not acting out in the way they are, if it is a manifestation of their disability, and that we can provide even more interventions to support. Another thing she wanted to talk about is that when you're requesting an educationally related mental health assessment, which is an ERMS assessment, this is part of the psychoeducational assessment, and that you need to be able to see clearly the ERMS assessment that is separate from their regular triennial or three-year review assessment. So making sure that you have a full IRMS report that is not the psychoeducational report. So those two things should be distinguished. And also, please, she felt that you need to know that you can always sign as a participant only. And if you agree to parts of the IEP, you can always list your exceptions. So we're going to come back to that because that was also a comment that another psychologist made, but she had a little bit more to say on that one. And of course, when we're looking at your child's present levels, that means their level of functioning right now. They're not just scores, but they give a full picture. They tell a story that helps us determine your child's needs, the needs for what type of goals, what type of services, and that is what's going to help drive placement. So another psychologist wanted to share that you should never navigate student support or special education or Section 504 process without the assistance of a high quality advocate. Now, he believes this because he really emphasizes that there are high quality advocates out there. And now anyone can call themselves an advocate. He's right when he says that. But some folks, you know, they make it about their ego, and it shouldn't be about that. It should be about the child and not about antagonizing district personnel, but it should be about collaborating and empowering the student and the family. That is a high quality advocate who knows what they're doing. They're not there to sow discord, but they're actually there to help the collaborative process. And another thing that he felt was important for you to know is, again, here comes that independent educational evaluation, the IEE, that you should exercise your right to request one, and the district will pay for it. Now, if you, and this is only if you have like lingering questions or concerns that the district did not, address. So the second thing that he really feels you should know is that you can always get an IEE done by a private examiner of your choice. And as long as that private examiner falls within specific criteria, it doesn't have to come from the district's list of providers that they give to parents. So you can choose someone else as long as they meet a certain criteria. Just ask. Also, he feels that schools should be using evidence-based practices to address student concerns and needs, and that really the onus is on the schools to share the literature that supports an instructional approach or intervention, as well as the progress monitoring data that shows it is working for your child. Ask for that data. Ask to see how your child is progressing toward those goals. And even though families cannot necessarily select a methodology, you know, general help and support is just inadequate in his opinion. Now, this particular psychologist is a hot button psychologist because he really believes strongly in inclusion. So do a lot of people that work in the field. So he's not alone, but there are people on the other side of the fence say, no, we should have those separate classes and, you know, service children in a way that is more separate. And so this psychologist definitely understands that this is a controversial topic and that, you know, the way that we have special education right now is similar to a modern day segregation and warehousing. You know, progress is slow in the field for this because you have spots where inclusion is very, very common, and in other places, it's not. And so in his opinion, he says resource rooms, special day classes, etc., continue to exist because they are the most efficient for district staffing models, not because they are particularly beneficial to children. I was like, wow, ooh, that's powerful. And so he also understands that, you know, some of the pullout supports can be necessary or helpful in some cases. Families should fight to ensure their child's needs are met as inclusive as possible. Inclusion differs from mainstreaming in that the services are still offered and seamlessly integrated into the setting that includes typical peers or your general education peers. And I totally understand where he's coming from. I was listening to a speaker not too long ago at a conference, and she talked about the importance of inclusion. And for her, her story started from birth when she was born unable to walk. So she's been in a wheelchair all her life, but she has, her parents actually fought for her to be included in the general ed setting. And today she has a family, a husband, and children of her own. And there's nothing stopping her from what she is doing. She's doing wonderful things. And right now, I can't even remember her name, but I promise I'm going to put a link to her video and her website so that you can check her out. She's awesome. I wish I could remember her name right now, but I'll research it and I'll put a link in the notes for you so you can check that out. But inclusion, hot button topic. Some people prefer the pullout. I mean, it just depends. Inclusion, it has your child, as long as they're on the same curriculum, right? It has your child in a classroom with their typical peers, and it will have two teachers. One has a special education credential, one has a general education credential, and they're both working the room, helping students, doing groups, all of those wonderful things. And I have to say that when I was a teacher, I did teach an inclusion period for English, and it was wonderful. I enjoyed it myself. And a lot of middle schools and high schools do this model anyway. But I enjoyed it, and I thought it was very beneficial for all students. And we didn't single kids out in our model. So I liked it. That was just my opinion. Another psychologist said that in many cases, you have these tier interventions that give your child way more assistance in the area of concern than a special education program does. I've seen this too, if I can truly be honest. She says, if you're able, get your child into tutoring as soon as delays are shared with you. Like, don't let it get to the point where we see a huge gap, if possible. And this is typically for kids who have an average IQ. You're not going to see that huge gap if you get the interventions right away and really target them to help them make that growth. Now, if there's something that is really severe, like a processing deficit that's really severe and it's truly impacting them, or they have multiple, then this may be difficult. But for the most part, a lot of times I've seen where kids just aren't getting those interventions up front and they're getting pushed to special education. But that's what I have seen happen. I've seen both. I've seen a very good intervention room actually help students not get to the level where they need or they meet eligibility for special education because the gap has widened so much. So basically, if your child is having trouble, get help right away. Don't let that gap widen. Okay. Also, I heard from another psychologist, and she said to let you know that eligibility category does not define their placement. If you disagree with the amount of time being spent in a resource room, or if you know that your child isn't being adequately served in a cross-categorical room, then you can ask for something different. Eligibility does not define placement. So they can have the eligibility of autism. It does not mean they need to be with kids who have autism, just in a room with children who have autism. Autism is found in every single program. It could be a gifted program. It could be more of our severe needs programs. It doesn't mean they need to be with other kids with autism. So it's important for you to know that. And that also if they have a specific learning disability or if they have speech, it does not mean that they can't be in a more restrictive environment such as one of our special day class programs. And it just really depends on your child's need where the placement fits. So most districts do not have that inclusion model, and they still have the separation between the different types of classes. But just know that it doesn't matter what their eligibility is. It's all about the need and which program is going to best meet your child's need. Now, another psychologist said it's important for parents to know to call a meeting. If you have concerns, call a meeting. Ask to see evidence of goals and the progress towards goals, those service logs, etc. If you feel your child is getting their free and appropriate education, or if they're not getting it, then feel free to call that IEP meeting. Be calm. So important. I'm glad she had said that. Be calm. That's important. And clear about your concerns. And most districts will try to resolve them. And someone who has filed for due process, this is her personal story. Complaints are necessary at times, but you can't unring that bell. So consider how old your child is, how many other kids you have in the district. And she even shared that her non-IEP child was getting lots of discipline referrals all of a sudden after she filed, which is unfortunate. That should not be happening. You have that right to exercise. And if you need to, then do it. So she said, think about how long is this relationship with you and them going to be if you do file and if there is no other alternative. And she wishes you the best if that is your situation, but she did it. She says she can't unring that bell, but she felt that something happened with her child where she had to file a complaint. And it's not there for fun. There is a process. And districts cannot be hostile towards your other children because you're advocating. So that's a civil rights issue. So sometimes it does get a little icky, but it's because you're holding people accountable, and that's going to be uncomfortable. So she also wanted you to know, don't sign the IEP until you're happy with it. Sign that you were there, attendance only. You do not have to sign the agreement. You can sign that you agree to parts or none. You can ask for a reevaluation, or you can ask for that independent education evaluation, IEE. And she also said, bring someone with you to your meetings. There are lots of rights parents have that are hidden in those 13 pages of legal jargon we call procedural safeguards. Read them or ask for them to be explained to you. Use the names and numbers at the end to call for assistance if you need it. So it just depends on your situation of what you think is the next level. And so do what you think is right. Do what you think you need to do to help your child. And that's what I can say, because I do what I need to do to help my kid who's also on an IEP. And I would do it again, because that is what I'm here from. I'm mom, mom first, and mama's going to do what she needs to do. So another school psychologist wanted you to know that when you hear, but we don't offer that here, that's not okay. Especially if you're asking something reasonable, it's a reasonable service or request, hearing, but that's where all of our autism kids go, is not okay. And like we talked about before, that label does not determine a placement. Your child can be where they are with the right supports. Another school psychologist wanted you to know that you need to express your concerns to the school and work with them to resolve the situation before you go towards filing a complaint. And that most districts that she knows are barely holding on by a thread and people are usually doing their best. And that might be your situation if you notice that people are doing their best and you haven't gone to the principal, for example, and that's maybe a place where you want to start, then do that. But if that's still not working, work your way up. Director of Special Education, they typically are very responsive, because they want to make sure that parents are heard so that you don't have to go get attorneys if you don't need to. So very good advice there. Also, the next school psychologist said, I consider myself a child advocate first, above all else. And I love that. I love that. And I believe that parents should be given the opportunity to understand their rights and have them clearly explained to them. But I also believe that schools, by and large, are doing the best by kids that they can. Most want to make things right when there's a problem. Filing a complaint shouldn't be the first course of action. Reach out to the powers that be, and this is what I say, just reach out to the powers that be so that you can get the situation resolved. And a lot of times that will resolve the situation. Now, I have seen moments where it didn't, and parents had to keep pressing to get their child's needs met. Sometimes I've seen where children weren't getting their services, and so parents were complaining, and if you have a school district that has unions, it could get a little bit more complicated as far as reprimanding that person for not doing their job. Maybe that's why your kid's not meeting their goals, but it's important for you to hold them accountable as well. This is your child. You are the mom. You are the dad. You are the one that is going to make the difference. And last but not least, I want to leave you with a resource. This came from another school psychologist. She said, look at Wright's Law and refer parents there. Their rights as a team member is important. And also you have the right to stay put. So you can stay put. If there's something in the new IEP that you don't like, again, you don't have to sign. You can just honor the last IEP until you get the issue resolved. So I hope that that was very helpful for you as you plan to advocate for your child. I hope that you're feeling inspired and equipped to better advocate for your child's needs. Now, I do want to challenge you, of course. So think about any school challenge your child may be facing right now and think about steps you want to take to get support from them. Now make your next move. Here's your loving reminder. Parents who are empowered with knowledge and understanding help to positively shape their child's future. And that's you. Well, I surely hope that this episode has blessed you. And if it has, just hit that follow or subscribe button so you don't miss any new episodes. And as you think about that sister, that friend, that coworker, that cousin, whoever it is that needs to hear this, share the link. ParentThemSuccessful.com, because that is going to make such a wonderful impact on their parenting journey. And if you're like me and you're serious about better supporting your child's growth and development, you can join my email list at StrongerMindsStrongerYouth.com/join-the-list. And of course, all the links will be in the show notes. Hey, I really do appreciate you, and I thank you so much for listening. So until next time, be blessed and love on your children.
Thank you for listening to the Parent Them Successful with licensed educational psychologist, Jessica Shields. We're so glad you've joined us and would love to connect with you outside of the show. To find more information about our services, the Empower House Academy, or to take our quiz, What's Your Parenting Style? Go to StrongerMindStrongerYouth.com. Feel free to email us directly at info@StrongerMindStrongerYouth.com. We'd love to hear from you. Other ways to stay connected are on Instagram and Facebook by searching Stronger Mind Stronger Youth, and on Twitter at @official_SMSY. Until next time, be well and love your children, for they are a gift from the Lord.